Last month, the Ohio House passed a bill to restrict access to abortion drugs. What could it mean for other medications? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the bill and examine the statistics on medication abortions and abortion drugs prescribed through telehealth are Ohio Policy Evaluation Network co-principal investigator Dr. Allison Norris and Cincinnati Enquirer state government reporter Jesse Ballmert. Welcome back, Dr. Norris and Jesse.
Thank you so much.
Happy to be here.
Jesse, tell us about this bill that's designed to reduce access to abortion pills in Ohio.
Yeah, so the bill that passed, it's House Bill 324, and essentially it would say that the Ohio Department of Health would create a list of drugs that have, quote unquote, like severe adverse effects on 5% of users or more. And this appears aimed largely at one of the drugs used in medication abortion. And if you were on this list, you would have to have an in-person visit, get some information about the risks of medication, and then a follow-up appointment. So it would reduce or completely eliminate the ability to get medication abortion via telehealth if this were to become law.
And Jesse, I understand this passed the House last month. Has the state Senate taken up this legislation?
It hasn't. The Ohio legislature is on a bit of a break right now around the holidays. Certainly, they're still like thinking about legislation, but they aren't going to have a voting session until kind of mid or late January. So this is something that they could consider when they come back.
We're talking about the statistics on medication abortions and a bill making its way through the Ohio State House that would restrict access to abortion drugs. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We already got an email from Linnea. Linnea writes, the language in this bill seems vague. What specific medications will require an in-person doctor's visit? I take birth control and medicine for anxiety and ADHD. Will these medications be on the list? Why is our legislature making decisions that should be made by a patient's healthcare provider? Telehealth has made healthcare so much more accessible. This will also cost health insurers and patients more money. A lot of the conversations about this bill have been focused on mifepristone. What happens when a patient lives far away to see the doctor in person? This could have serious health consequences if they have pregnancy complications. Also, apparently this bill would require physicians to share disinformation with patients before prescribing mifepristone. Ohioans already voted loud and clear to protect abortion access. Our state legislature is blatantly disregarding our voices. Only a doctor should be able to decide what's safe for their patients. So that's a long email that raises a lot of concerns. I want to go through a number of them. Let's start with the concern that the language is vague. Dr. Norris, how do you interpret this idea that the medications that have severe and adverse effects, what does that mean to you?
Thanks very much. The listener really raises some super important issues. The aspect of House Bill 324 might sound reasonable on the first read, like protecting patients from serious adverse effects, but really, based on both my training in medicine and as a PhD epidemiologist, I observe that it really could prohibit standard evidence-based medical care. We have standard care based on evidence means relying on information that scientists have examined and affirmed. And with respect to mifepristone in particular, the scientific consensus is that serious adverse events amongst users of mifepristone occur very, very rarely, less than 1/3 of 1% of the time. It is a very safe medication. And so the vague language in the law would mean that other sources of evidence, not these rigorous pieces of science that I'm referring to, could be relied on by the Ohio Department of Health to put a medication on the list and then put into place some burdensome requirements that would reduce people's access to care.
What other sources of information?
The bill states that the director's assessment should be based on whichever of the following sources shows a higher adverse reaction rate, including insurance claims, patient reports to healthcare professionals, and data from the Federal Drug Administration, which once again sounds kind of reasonable, but unfortunately, it is the case that in politicized forms of healthcare, special interest groups run biased research projects and declare findings that are simply wrong. That contributes broadly to disinformation. And according to the law, as it's written with House Bill 324, the director of health assessment would rely on the highest rate, even if it's reported by some biased and very poorly designed research.
Well, Dr. Norris, I know you said that the severe adverse effects for mifepristone in particular are very rare, but what are they? What are the medical risks associated with that drug? What can patients experience in those very rare circumstances?
The risks around the medications that are used for pregnancy termination include mifepristone and misoprostol, and so I'm not speaking so clearly on this. Basically, those severe adverse effects can include things like hemorrhage and bleeding. And so those are very clearly detailed when a patient is taking a medication to know what to look for and when should they go for care if they're experiencing any adverse effect.
Okay. And you said earlier that those kinds of adverse effects are rare. What did you say, 1/3 of 1% or something?
That's exactly right. It's okay. Very rare. So all medications do have some adverse effects. It's sort of part of the medical system is that we know that medications have an intended effect, and then sometimes there are adverse effects that can also accompany. And so it's really a critical part of care is to know both what is the medication supposed to do and when should you turn for care because you've had an outcome that is not the desired effect of the medication and you need further treatment.
Well, this listener, Linnea, also raised the question about birth control and psychiatric drugs. From your perspective, from your, you know, as an MD, as a PhD, do you think the language that's in this bill could create restrictions for medications like that, for other medications?
Certainly, it is the case that there are, for sure, there are medications that have severe adverse effects that are more common than those with mifepristone. And so the regulations around these increased particular kinds of scrutiny with in-person appointments and scheduling follow-up care absolutely could be applied to many other medications that have serious adverse effects that are greater than 5%. Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Norris, I want to get into some of the statistics. How common are medication abortions in Ohio and across the United States? Are those numbers growing?
Yes. And in Ohio, in 2024, 47% of all abortions that were had in the state were provided through medication abortion. And that measures abortions that happened in person. So when a person goes in person to a clinic, they can have a procedural abortion or a medication abortion in Ohio in person. And now, increasingly, both in Ohio and across the United States, patients are receiving medication abortion provided through telehealth. So they're receiving the pills in the mail and taking the medication at home after connecting with a provider virtually. And through in January to June of 2025 per month, there were about 1,000 telehealth medication abortions in Ohio.
Hmm. Okay. So do you know what the numbers are for the U.S. in terms of medication abortions prescribed via telehealth? I don't know if you have those the numbers at your at handy?
There are the one that I know in particular is these telehealth abortions that are provided under shield laws. So these are provided by healthcare workers who are in states that provide some protection to those healthcare workers who are mailing medication abortion to states that do not permit virtual provision of medication abortion. And those are nearly 15,000 per month.
Okay.
So the numbers are going up and up. And at this point, the increase in telehealth abortion through the United States has just increased and increased steadily since the time of the Dobbs decision.
Okay. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, Beth. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for calling. What's your question or comment?
Well, first of all, I'm not trying to, cause any hairs to stand up, but I worked many years in Project Rachel, which is a post-abortion kind of recovery program for women who have a hard time dealing with that. And when we first heard about the medical side of this by taking a pill, I'd say there's people who are pro-choice and there's people who are pro-life. And then there's people in the center who are, oh my God, I'm pregnant. What do I do? So they try and make it as painless and as, hidden, nobody knows as possible. And these pills seem to be the answer to that. But the concern we always had were technically these women could be for the first time delivering a baby in a toilet by themselves. And I haven't heard that side effect talked about it. That, they're not seeing the doctor, especially the stuff where they can get it off the internet.
Okay.
Just for—
Yeah. Well, thank you. I want to ask our Dr. Norris about that. Is that a side effect that can happen with this medication? What the circumstance that Beth just raised?
Unfortunately, that is not a circumstance that will be happening. People use medication abortion early in pregnancy, and so the pregnancy comes to an end long before that kind of scary circumstance that you're describing. And so people experience bleeding, much like a heavy period from using medication abortion.
Thank you for that call, Beth. I do certainly acknowledge there are a lot of listeners with very strong feelings about this issue. There are a lot of people who think of abortion as ending the life of a baby, and I certainly understand that. And there are many others who think of abortion in different terms. So thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. We do appreciate it. Dr. Norris, you mentioned shield laws before. Are patients in states with abortion bans, are they still getting abortions using telehealth because of those shield laws that shield doctors and allow them to do telehealth and prescribe in that way?
Yes, people are receiving abortions in the states where they live now through telehealth medication abortion. When the Dobbs decision came down, many states banned abortion outright, and it meant that the people who lived in those states had to travel sometimes, hundreds and thousands of miles to go to a clinic in person when they could no longer go in their own state. And in 2023, several states passed shield laws, which permit healthcare providers in their states to provide telehealth medication abortion to patients who live anywhere in the United States. And so telehealth medication abortion is available for people in all 50 states and DC. And it has really provided a lifeline for people who live in states where there are no abortion clinics because in-person care has been prohibited entirely. And at this point, the numbers in many of those states that have total abortion bans, including some of our neighboring states, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Indiana, the number of abortions that people are receiving in those states under shield laws is beginning to come close or sometimes exceeds the number of abortions that were provided in person before the Dobbs decision. So it's absolutely providing access to thousands and thousands of people who need abortion care and don't have the ability to drive out of state to go to an in-person clinic. The final thing I'll say on that matter is that because medication abortion is used earlier in pregnancy and the preferred method or even an acceptable method to every patient, there are still millions of people who live in places where they cannot obtain an in-person abortion. And the telehealth medication abortion is the only thing that's available to them without some really pretty extreme efforts to travel. So the abortion bans that are in existence across the United States are still prohibiting access in a profound way to this very basic healthcare.
We will continue this conversation after a short break, and later in the program, as city leaders discuss the potential for a new arena, we look back on Cincinnati's hockey history. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our conversation about the statistics on medication abortions and a bill making its way through the Ohio State House that would restrict access to abortion drugs. My guests are Ohio Policy Evaluation Network co-principal investigator, Dr. Allison Norris, and Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter, Jesse Ballmer. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jesse, we've been talking about this legislation, House Bill 324, that passed the House. I know you said lawmakers are taking a bit of a break right now for around the holidays. Has Republican leadership in the Ohio Senate given any indication about whether this bill, House Bill 324, is a priority for them?
You know, I don't think we've expressly asked the Senate president about this piece of legislation, but in general, you've seen Republican lawmakers who could have a supermajority in the House and the Senate prioritize abortion restrictions over the years. That has been a little bit harder in recent years because Ohioans voted, I think, about 57% in 2023 to enshrine a constitutional right to abortion access and other reproductive rights decisions in the state constitution. And so we haven't really repealed a lot of the abortion restrictions that are in Ohio law, but those are being challenged in state courts.
Dr. Norris, if access to abortion drugs is restricted as the result, if this bill were to become law, do you think patients, or do you expect that patients would turn to other sources for the medication? And I guess, you know, I know there are other websites that people sometimes go to, community groups. I wonder if you expect that could happen and if there are health risks associated with that approach.
You know, I've been really thinking about this this question, and Jesse raising the fact that the laws are the many abortion restrictions in Ohio are being challenged. Ohio has a law that bans telemedicine for medication abortion. So Ohioans have been able to receive medication abortion through telehealth because of the SHIELD laws. Up until recently, the state court temporarily blocked this law of Ohio. And potentially it does violate Ohio's freedom of Reproductive Freedom Amendment, and it will be permanently blocked. But it is the case that the utilization of virtual telehealth through the SHIELD laws was an innovation that emerged from the restrictions created by states, both before and following Dobbs. And so, if it were the case that on a federal level medication abortion were no longer available, it would be disastrous for a patient's health. There would be thousands and thousands of people that had to stay pregnant when they did not intend to, and it would be a very dangerous situation all around. In our own state, in 2025, there were 1,000 telehealth provided medication abortions. So that's just in one state. So the protection of this access to this care, this very, very safe care and effective care is paramount to the public health well-being.
Jesse, who are the people that you've heard supporting this bill? Who are the people opposing it?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the standard group of individuals on each side. So you have groups like Ohio Right to Life, the Center for Christian Virtue, the Ohio Catholic Conference are supportive of this change. And then the opponents are people like Abortion Forward or Planned Parenthood, kind of the proponents of abortion access. So we've really seen these lines drawn on a lot of pieces of legislation in Ohio. What I thought was interesting about this particular bill, especially when the as introduced version, so like the initial bill, had opposition from the Ohio Council of Retail Merchants because they were concerned that this would spill over into other medications. The initial language would have put restrictions on over-the-counter medications. That's been changed to just prescription medications. But especially as this was first introduced, there was a lot of concern that this would impact drugs other than just kind of the standard abortion debate.
Well, Jesse, I want to go back to Linnea's email, the email our listener sent, because we've mentioned this a couple times, but she raised in her email the question of this constitutional amendment that Ohio voters approved in 2023. Does the language of that amendment anticipate anything like this bill, like the restrictions that this bill would introduce if it were to become law?
So I think what we're going to find out through the courts and ultimately the Ohio Supreme Court is where is that line? You know, we are guaranteed in the Ohio Constitution access to abortion, but does that mean access to abortion without a doctor talking to you 24 hours beforehand? Does it mean access to abortion via telemedicine? Where is the line? Where will the Ohio Supreme Court draw that line? And I think that's something that the attorneys are going to be arguing about.
So if this were to become law, would you expect a court challenge, a lawsuit challenging this particular provision?
Certainly. I think proponents of the 2023 amendment, again, which passed, you know, with pretty significant support in Ohio, are going to be wary of any sort of restrictions or barriers to abortion access.
Is that what you would expect to see also, Dr. Norris?
Yes, indeed. And I was going to add to Jesse's thoughtful explanation of sort of the advocates on both sides of the argument. In the middle are the like millions of people in Ohio who are not an active part of an advocacy group, but we know through survey data, we know that people in Ohio, reproductive age women in Ohio, are supportive of access to abortion. And we saw through voters that Ohio voters are also supportive of the Reproductive Freedom Amendment. And so I think the vast majority of people in Ohio are supportive of protecting access to mifepristone, to telehealth for abortion, and to all forms of reproductive health care using the standard standards of medicine and not through pieces of restrictive legislation.
Well, I've been talking with Ohio Policy Evaluation Network co-principal investigator Dr. Allison Norris and Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Ballmert. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Up next, you might remember the Mighty Ducks or even the Stingers, but what about the Mohawks? We discuss Cincinnati hockey history. This is Cincinnati Edition.